Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. So I'll talk about work together I've done together with Csaba Csaki, his student Johannes Heinonen, and Jay Hubisch. And it will be about what we call the odd decays from even anomalies, also trying to mimic some signals of supersymmetry, in particular of gauge-mediated supersymmetry breaking by series with universal extra dimensions. So I'll begin, here's the outline of my talk. I'll begin by a brief introduction reminding you about gauge mediation and what is usually often called a golden signal for gauge mediation, which doesn't have to exist in all gauge-mediated models, but if the parameters are right, you can have spectacular signals in gauge mediations. Gauge mediation, I'll remind you what universal extra dimensions are, and it's a universal extra dimension that will be a topic of the talk, and I'll describe a model. The purpose of the model is twofold. One is to study anomalies in series with five dimensions on the intervals. People studied that already earlier, usually in a context of anomalies in gauge. In gauge symmetries, what we will do, we'll have a symmetry which is a global symmetry, and we'll try to understand how anomalies in a global symmetry plays a role in physics. But the second reason for looking at this model is that will be the model which will allow us to have interesting signals which mimic gauge mediation, and also will produce new, somewhat unusual candidate for dark matter in a different region of parameter space. And then I'll discuss phenomenology or potential phenomenology of this model. We have not done a very serious study of that yet, and I'll go to conclusions at the end. I don't remember how I changed pages. So just to remind you about gauge mediation, The framework is the following. Supersymmetry is broken at low energies, somewhere between 10 to the 5 and 10 to the 10 gigaelectron volts. Therefore, gravitational contribution to soft parameters are negligible, and the main contributions which generate soft masses in the standard model in MSSM are due to the gauge interactions between some fields and Suzy breaking sector which carry standard model quantum numbers. Because Suzy is broken at low energies, the gravitina is the lightest supersymmetric particle. It mass scales like this, so its lowest, more or less, value is around a few electron volts. Next to lightest supersymmetric particle can be the Slaptonus neutralina. There are several possibilities. If one goes to new ideas about general gauge mediation, where gauge-mediated models are just more or less characterized simply by requirements that there are no flavor change in neutral currents, there are more parameters and there is even more freedom for having different NLSPs that, as far as model itself goes, at least, there will, of course, be phenomenological constraints. So because the lightest supersymmetric particle is gravitina, NLSP will always decay eventually to the gravitina. And the typical decay will be, for example, for neutralina, it will go to a photon or Z and a gravitina. So all events will end up with photons and missing energy. And, of course, because of the R parities, there will be even number of NLSPs decaying. So why is it interesting? Because if you choose the right energy scales, you will see events where tracks don't point back to primary vertices in the decay. And that has to do with the fact, so basically you are decaying to gravitina, your NLSP is decaying to gravitina. Naively, the coupling is Planck suppressed and very small. But because the coupling goes through the fact that it couples to really a Goldsteiner, the coupling is only suppressed by scale of supersymmetry breaking 1 over F. And without going into any details, here's a formula for the decay length with some values of the supersymmetry breaking scale specifying. So if supersymmetry breaking is sufficiently high, then NLSP is stable on collider scale. So it just propagates through the collider. It's neutral. So we have missing energy and it decays somewhere outside of the collider. If the Suzy breaking scale is very low, then it's a prompt decay and decay products will point back to the original vertex. But in a region of a supersymmetry breaking scale is about 100 or rather 1,000 TeV, one can see decays in a collider with the displayed vertices, and that is traditionally said to be a very specific signal for gauge mediation, because it's hard to come up with models which will do something like that. Well, in general, supersymmetry, it's going to be hard to distinguish supersymmetry from something else, and probably the primary candidate which can confuse one is universal extra dimensions proposed by Sincha and others, among others, and the point is that except for the fact that the spins are different, spectra in universal extra dimensions can very easily mimic spectra in supersymmetric models, at least if you look at superpartners and the lightest light Kaluza-Klein states. So without spin determination, it's going to be hard to figure out what it is. So the main ingredients of the models, and I'll just go very quickly through that. Also, this is what our model is based on. We'll think about five-dimensional theory, where fifth dimension is compactified on S1 mod Z2 orbifold. And one need to impose boundary conditions at the end of the orbifold. So all the standard model fields that we want to be light have plus-plus boundary conditions. They have flat profiles, and therefore when one does Kaluza-Klein decomposition, there are zero modes, and zero modes will be the standard model fields with all the Kaluza-Klein states also present there. And one also imposes Kaluza-Klein parity, and there are one reason to impose Kaluza-Klein parity is because it makes these models easier to satisfy experimental constraints. It forbids Kaluza-Klein parity. Forbids tree-level contributions to electrovic precision observables. It's also interesting because there is a Kaluza-Klein parity, it basically plays a role similar to our parity and provides a stable dark matter candidate. So I'm not sure if I'll go in enough details to see where it enters in various formulas, but the way to impose Kaluza-Klein parity is basically a reflection symmetry around the center of extra dimension, so all the wave functions will be either even or odd relative to this reflection symmetry, which exchanges the fixed points, the end of the orbifold, the ends of extra dimension. And as I mentioned earlier, universal extra dimensions very easily can mimic various models of supersymmetry and supersymmetry breaking. So our starting point was to ask whether this typical or very nice signal of gauge mediation, not generic signal of gauge mediation, but only if supersymmetry is broken at a specific energy scale, whether that signal can be mimicked by universal extra dimensions, and whether one can get displaced vertices in models with universal extra dimensions. So here's our model. It's really just a UED, where we have a five-dimensional Minkowski space compactified once again on S1 mod Z2. What we will do, in addition to the standard model gauge group in the bulk, we'll introduce another U1 symmetry, Pacek-Wien symmetry, which is a gauge symmetry in the bulk. So all the standard model fields live in the bulk. They're all charged under this Pacek-Wien symmetry, you can easily see the charges are shown here. All the charges are the same, therefore the symmetry is going to be anomalous. Of course, it's five-dimensional theory, so these are, I'm counting the standard model fields, which are zero modes of five-dimensional fermions. Of course, the fermions come in Dirac multiplets in five-dimensional theory. There is not going to be five-dimensional anomaly of U1 Pacek-Wien, but once we reduce the theory to four-dimensional description, the fermion metacontent clearly is anomalous. It's also, once we want to introduce the symmetry, we are forced to have two Higgs doublet model just because there wouldn't be the symmetry with a single Higgs. So to have this symmetry, we'll need two Higgses.
mean bulk symmetry, you could. Which symmetry?
Pitch-Hedwig symmetry.
But in the bulk, or?
It's a gauge symmetry in the bulk, and it's global symmetry, anomalous global symmetry, as we will see once we look at four-dimensional description. But we still need two Higgses to just get the symmetry. There are no symmetries in the standard model. I probably stepped on the cable somewhere. Okay, so now I can go back. Oops, too far. Why is it so slow? John will say it's my Linux. Okay, why is that? Okay, so just to finish the description, what we will do, we want just a standard model in four-dimensional decomposition, so we'll impose boundary conditions where these guys all have zero modes, and at first step also H up and H down have zero modes, and so that will be a standard model meta content. But as far as the U1 Pitch-Hedwig is concerned, we impose directly boundary conditions on both boundaries, and therefore U1 Pitch-Hedwig is broken by boundary conditions. Kaluza-Klein parity requires that there are the same directly boundary conditions on both ends. Well, eventually we need to break the standard model, so Higgs fields have vacuum expectation value, and they spontaneously break U1 Pitch-Hedwig. However, if we neglect the fact for a second that U1 Pitch-Hedwig is anomalous, then there would be a massless Goldstone coming from the spontaneous symmetry breaking, and because of anomalies, it would lead that Goldstone would behave like electric scale axion, so it would rule out the model. So what we will do on the boundary will also explicitly break Pitch-Hedwig symmetry by a mu term, which will basically be mu h up h down. So it's really like a supersymmetric mu term. I think I don't actually like our own notation. It's a mu term, but its mass dimension is mass squared. So it's mu h up h down in the scalar potential. So we'll break that Pitch-Hedwig symmetry explicitly. So there are several factors here. There is a gauge Pitch-Hedwig symmetry in the bulk. It's broken by the boundary conditions and remains only a global symmetry in four-dimensional description. It's anomalous global symmetry. It's spontaneously broken by the Higgs wave, and there are explicit symmetry breaking terms to avoid axions that we'll see where those axions come from and why they are dangerous. And we'll also impose this Kaluza-Klein parity on this model. So we are breaking U1 Pitch-Hedwig symmetry by boundary conditions. So B mu, where B is the gauge field for U1 PQ, B mu is going to be massive field. It has no zero mode, but that means that fifth component of that gauge field, B5, is a light field with a flat wave function. What's interesting about it, even so, B5 has even wave function, and it's flat for zero mode. As we will see, it actually behaving like an odd field in its couplings. So the coupling of B5, it couples to the zero mode and the first Kaluza-Klein mode because it's all under Kaluza-Klein parity rather than coupling to two zero modes. This field will behave like an axion, and as I said, it will be Kaluza-Klein odd. Just to simplify the discussion, I'll perform most of the analysis in a toy model with a single Higgs scalar, and at the end of the day, I'll just repeat the results for the two Higgs scalar model. So,
isn't there an axion even when the Higgs value is zero?
Yes, there is. There will be two axions, one Kaluza-Klein even, one Kaluza-Klein odd. Even axion will couple to states whose total parity is even. Odd axion will couple to the states whose total parity is odd. And the even one would be at the dangerous axion that I want to lift because otherwise it would be electrobit scale axion.
Why are there two?
Can you wait? Transparency or two, I'll have an example of in deconstruction which will make it clear. Bulk U1 group is broken by boundary conditions. As I said, This is a set of boundary conditions. And by imposing boundary conditions, we can see that there is a residual gauge transformation, which can shift the five-dimensional gauge field as long as the gauge parameter, gauge function, satisfies this additional condition that it vanishes, its derivatives, four-dimensional derivatives, vanish on the boundaries. So we can try and ask what wave functions are, or what gauge transformation satisfies that. And So to do the physics anyway, we'll need to impose gauge fixing conditions. If we wrote in Lagrangian, which I didn't show here, obviously there would be a mixing terms between B mu and B 5. So we'll choose a gauge mixing condition so that the gauge fixing condition so that gauge fixing Lagrangian will cancel those mixing terms between B 5 and B mu, and with this gauge fixing Lagrangian, there will be residual gauge transformations. For any gauge transformation satisfying this equation, it's still an allowed gauge transformation. And substituting this, including the boundary conditions, and working in unitary gauge, these are residual gauge transformations. So this will be a symmetry parameter. Basically, beta plus is like doing U1 Pacek-Wien global symmetry transformation. Before I broke the boundary, the symmetry by boundary conditions, that would be a local gauge transformation which could depend on x mu in four-dimensional part. But now it ended up by requiring that it's a residual gauge transformation and requiring that it satisfies boundary conditions. It's just a constant, and it's really just U-Van Pacek-Wien symmetry, global symmetry transformation now. But there is this new parameter, beta minus, which looks like another global symmetry transformation, where transformation parameter is a constant in four-dimensional sense, but changes along the extra dimension. Here are the transformations of the gauge field. The four-dimensional components are invariant, and B5 transforms by a shift, so it behaves like a Goldstone boson for a spontaneously broken global symmetry. But all I did so far was to have boundary conditions which break gauge symmetry, but U1 Pacek-Wien is still a global symmetry. It's still a classical physics. I didn't consider anomalies breaking that symmetry yet.
But you broke it at both ends. So.
I broke it at both ends, but because I did it, imposed Kaluza-Klein parity, it really is just one symmetry breaking. And once again, if you look, wait a little bit for deconstruction, it will make it slightly more clear. But again, this is one argument is this looks like a shift of a Goldstone boson, and beta plus does not appear in any of symmetry transformations of the field, which would be the case if it corresponds to unbroken global symmetry. So that's what I was going to say here. And if there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking, we should have a symmetry as energy scale associated with that symmetry breaking. That energy scale has to do with the size of extra dimension and five-dimensional U1 gauge coupling, and I will show a little later where it comes about. So here's a deconstruction analogy. So let me try to get that five-dimensional model as a product of deconstructed and think of it as a product of n U1 gauge groups, and there is no good deconstruction of fermions in five dimensions. Nevertheless, I'll just try to use it. So I'll by considering the boundary conditions that I was imposing in the five dimensional theory, I'll think about first and last U1s as being just global symmetries. And everything else is the gauge symmetry in the bulk. So it's like writing equal masses for the gauge bosons on two ends and sending them to infinity. And there are n minus 1 by fundamental Higgs fields. So with charges, say there is one Higgs field with charge plus 1 here, minus 1 here, plus 1 here, minus 1 under the next one, and so on. So these are in usual, as usually in deconstruction, these will be fifth components of the five-dimensional gauge field. And let me consider once again looking at the deconstruction of a theory with Kaluza-Klein parity, and also looking at the zero mode for B5, or motivated by zero mode for B5, which has a flat profile in extra dimension. So let me think about all Higgs's acquiring vacuum expectation values which are identical. Then this U1 to the N symmetry is going to be spontaneously broken by N minus 1 vacuum expectation values to a single U1. And the unbroken U1 is a diagonal combination of those global and local U1s, and it is just that U1 Petchek-Wien symmetry reduced to four dimensions that I was talking about, and there should be a symmetry transformation beta plus changing that I had earlier is precisely corresponds in the continuum to that symmetry transformation for the unbroken symmetry. However, there are only N minus 1 gauge symmetries, so N minus 1 Higgs's will be eaten, or N minus 1 Goldstones will be eaten by the gauge bosons, and there will be remaining one Goldstone boson, which remains massless, and it's true Goldstone boson, and so there will be that symmetry transformation parameter beta minus corresponds to a shift in a Goldstone boson because there is a spontaneously broken U1. Does that kind of answer your question about two fields? It will be a little more detail in five dimension later on from technical perspective. You just see that there are two zero modes in the spectrum. But the only qualitative argument explaining why there is a Goldstone plus an unbroken global symmetry is the one I can see here. So the unbroken one is diagonal combination of these U1s. Broken one, spontaneously broken one, I can do depending on which basis I want to be working is whether the basis of or mass eigenstate basis for Kaluza-Klein states or charge eigenstate basis. But in one of them, I can write that spontaneously broken one as a difference of these U1s at the end. U1, first difference of charges between these two U1s is the U1 orthogonal one to the diagonal, so to say, is the one which is spontaneously broken, and it's just a global symmetry. So now I want to go to the next step where we have this B5 field which is massless. It has a flat wave function. It has an even wave function. It behaves like a Goldstone boson in terms of that residual symmetry transformation. And of course, there is one more among many types. There is an equality sign here. So I want to argue that B5 interactions are odd. So for example, B5 interacts through with the fermions, writing down just B5 components of this, and then doing decomposition in Kaluza-Klein states. Even so, B5 has an even wave function. It will interact with one even and one odd fermion. The reason it has to be is that interactions of B5 always come either with gamma 5 or with derivatives, and therefore to make a Kaluza-Klein to make an even interaction one needs it coupled to one even and one odd fermion. Writing down four-dimensional Dirac fermion as two left-handed fermions psi and chi here, one can actually substitute this into the Lagrangian. One can easily find sines and cosines corresponding to the Kaluza-Klein states of this even and odd decomposition Kaluza-Klein modes of the fermions. And doing the integral over the extra dimension, B5 wave function is even, and in fact, it's even flat. One can see that that the coupling is given here, and so it basically vanishes whenever it couples to a state with which is even on under KK parity, and it requires, and it only is non-vanishing when it couples to one even and one odd state under KK parity, and this is one place where one can figure out what is the effective scale of the symmetry breaking, because the coupling of this five-dimensional guy is determined by five-dimensional gauge coupling and the size of extra dimension. But because it's a Goldstone corresponding to spontaneously broken gauge group, it has to be related to a symmetry breaking scale.
Size of Kaiser, those the densities of the fermion.
Yeah, it's a KK decomposition of the, so yeah. It's you know, right in a.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay. So they're just for zero mode would be just a standard model fermion. Let's see, that one I already did. It's changing too slow. Okay, so the next step is it just looking at. What we have U1 Pacek-Wien symmetry. We spontaneously broke it by boundary conditions, but and it will be broken because it's a global symmetry. It's anomalous. Sorry, we explicitly broke the gauge part of the symmetry by boundary conditions. We also got a Goldstone boson, but of course we'll also need to break eventually electrovic symmetry, so Higgs will get vacuum expectation value, and here is where I'm switching to a single Higgs toy model. So the Higgs will get vacuum expectation value, and as usual, it will have a Goldstone boson. Let me write the representation for the Higgs in this form. And there will be, I can write explicitly the Lagrangian for this bulk theory, and there will be mixing terms now between the five-dimensional gauge field and a new Goldstone. Again, that completely standard thing. So in Lagrangian, we'll have mixing terms. As usual, I will want to gauge fix the Lagrangian to do quantum physics, and it will be convenient to gauge fix the Lagrangian with this new gauge fixing condition, which will basically get rid of mixing of either B5 or pi, the Goldstone coming from the Higgs. From the Higgs acquiring vacuum expectation value, will kill both of those mixings with the four-dimensional B-mil. Now the residual gauge invariant that I used to have, which was just a constant plus a shift, which was linear in extra dimensions. If I find what is residual gauge invariance in my new Lagrangian with now spontaneously broken Pacek-Wien symmetry, the flat part corresponds to becomes a cosh, linear part becomes a sinh, and both of these symmetries will now be obviously spontaneously broken. This one, which was hard to describe what the symmetry is, was spontaneously broken to begin with. This one, which was just U1 Pacek-Wien, is broken by vacuum expectation value of the Higgs. And I can explicitly calculate, solve equations of motion for that Lagrangian in five dimensions with boundary conditions, look at zero modes, and what I explicitly will find is that there are two zero modes. Even so, we started with a single bulk U1 symmetry. There are two zero modes, which I will call odd Kaluza-Klein odd and Kaluza-Klein even, based on how they couple to the standard model fermions and their Kaluza-Klein excitations. But what you can see now, the zero modes, the mass eigenstates, are linear combinations of B5, the five-dimensional gauge boson, and pi, which was a component Goldstone living inside of the Higgs. And these mass eigenstates are both even and odd at the same time. I mean, as far as their wave functions go, they have both even and odd wave functions terms. So Kaluza, just as I mentioned, Kaluza-Klein parity of each mode is determined by the couplings of the mode, not by how wave function of the mode looks, because each mass eigenstate actually is neither even nor odd.
Is the fourth line there supposed to be pi-zero odd?
Yeah, the fourth line is supposed to be pi-zero even, sorry.
I guess I just
copied and pasted right. And then changed everything, but not everything. So these are even, these are odd, and it's in terms of their couplings. And this guy arises from a spontaneous symmetry breaking, which was a good symmetry before the Higgs acquired vacuum expectation value. And that's an anomalous symmetry, so this guy will couple like a axion with the coupling suppressed by one of the weeps, that's where the symmetry is broken. That would be dangerous, so we will want to lift this guy from the spectrum. And this guy is, in my original description, what was that B5 Goldstone. This will be the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle, which has odd couplings to all the fields in the theory, and basically replaces B5 in the discussion. So to lift that extra axion, we can simply explicitly break Peccei mean symmetry on the boundaries. It's a global symmetry on the boundaries after all, so we can write a Higgs mass terms, and that's a mistake, that should be mu here to be consistent with the rest of the slides. So we in the STOI model, which is easier to just calculate and discuss, the symmetry breaking term is h squared plus h star squared. H carries a charge plus one and the Peccei-Quinn symmetry, therefore it breaks the symmetry explicitly. If I did talk about the full standard model, I would write a mu term h up, h down plus Hermitian conjugate. Again, there is no supersymmetry, these are just scalars. So I can write down the vacuum expectation value for the Higgs, expand around the wave, and I will see that there is a brain localized mass term for the Goldstone because I explicitly broke the symmetry, where Goldstone, once again, is denoted by pi. And I can figure out what the potential is for pi is really, you know, I had this decomposition in terms of Kaluza-Klein and Kaluza-Klein even in odd mass eigenstate. So potential for these zero modes that I used to have is now has this form. So first of all, now they approximate zero modes because by adding these terms on the boundary, I basically suppress the Higgs wave function there, so Higgs is not going to be flat everywhere in the space-time. So what in five along the fifth dimension, so whatever its wave function is not going to be flat. Mass spectrum will change somewhat. So these what used to be zero modes are just approximate zero modes. This calculation, which can analytically be this result for the masses, which can be analytically obtained if we assume that they're still the wave function are still flat, is a good approximation. We did a numerical check by choosing mu, for example, up to a 300 GeV squared, and doing numerical calculation. So this term was giving us a good approximation with better than 1% approximation for Kaluza-Klein mode, and this term was slightly less perfect approximation, but it still was as good as 2%. So this is the dangerous axion, which would be electroweak axion. It would couple to FF dual, but we are breaking the symmetry explicitly at a scale 300 GeV. So this term, basically, this potentially dangerous electroweak axion gets a large mass and doesn't cause any problems. The second Goldstone, the second potential axion, gets a mass essentially through CSO mechanism, and its mass can be small as long as the effective symmetry breaking scale for that extra global symmetry is sufficiently large. And you control that extra global symmetry by controlling your five-dimensional gauge coupling. So if your five-dimensional theory is sufficiently weakly coupled, we will consider examples where this F Peccei-Quinn is as high as 10 to the 9 GeV. That basically means that your five-dimensional coupling G5 squared is inverse of 10 to the 9 GeV. So you have one light and one heavy state. And generalization to the Higgs model is very simple. Now we have two Higgses, a single Goldstone living in both of the Higgses. The effective symmetry breaking scale is sum of square root of sum squares of up, V up and V down. The mu term, as I said before, is just H up, H down plus complex conjugate and not just the term which I had earlier. The formulas for zero mass parameters are exactly the same, except that one has an effective mu here, which has a factor of sine 2 beta in it. And so one can just estimate what would be the mass of that pseudo-Goldstone boson, assuming that the heavy one that we do want to lift from the spectrum is around 300 GeV, and the mass is, as you can see, it's 74 keV, and you can make it larger and lift it all the way to make it as heavy as electrovic scale if you reduce Pechakvin symmetry breaking scale, and you can't reduce it much below TeV, in part because you don't want your five-dimensional theory to be strongly coupled at a scale where you're going to be calculating interactions. But it could be a few TeV, and if you go all the way there, then this light axion, a pseudo-Goldstone, is going to have a mass of order 100 GeV, so it will be typical new particle, electrovic scale particle, and it will be able to play a role, for example, of a dark matter candidate, because once again, it's Kaluza-Klein odd, so it will be the lightest and stable particle.
What does the size of the extra fifth dimension, what role does that play in all this? Suppose you took it to be very small.
Then there would be no new physics at the TeV, and we wouldn't be discussing.
So where does that enter in these formulas? That's what
In this formula, this F Pechakvin is 1 over G5 times, in the denominator there is G5 and the square root of the size of extra dimension. Mm-hmm. And we want, basically we want the size of extra dimension to be electrovic scale, or greater than 400 inverse, or smaller than inverse of 400 GeV, say, of whatever the experimental constraints are.
Okay.
So that is, we are considering fixed, because if we make it too small, it's not interesting, and of course it cannot be too large.
Yeah.
But the size of the five-dimensional gauge coupling is a free parameter in our theory, and once again, supersymmetry, you can justify the scale of supersymmetry breaking somehow from dynamical effects and so on. Here, it's just a free parameter which can take any value, and we don't have justification to choose one value over the other. Switch. Okay, so let me look at, I want to now, I have this light field, which is axion, which is coupling as if it's Kaluza-Klein odd field, and I want to figure out how does it couple and what the effects of this field are. So I want to look at the effects of the fact that U1 Pechakvin is started as anomalous symmetry, anomalous global symmetry, even so I explicitly broke it. So let me look, just remind you very quickly about the couplings of axion in four-dimensional example. So suppose I have some anomalous symmetry, anomalous U1, and I have a Higgs field which breaks that anomalous U1 spontaneously. Writing down the Goldstone, I can get rid in a standard way. I can move the Goldstone, redefine my fermionic fields, and move the Goldstone into the coupling, into the kinetic terms, and figure out that Goldstone couples only derivatively to a current. This is a current which is anomalous. And as I'm doing this field redefinition, there is the path integral measure is anomalous, and so anomalous Jacobian contains this coupling of the Goldstone to pi of f of dual. So basically the argument I'm going to do in five dimensions is just to repeat this and figure out what the coupling of my five-dimensional Goldstones is to f of dual. And we've done it in paper. We've done it two ways. I'll just describe a qualitative way of figuring it out without going into all the details. So first of all, bulk physics is non-chiral. It cannot lead to anomalies. And all the anomalies are localized on the brainsware theory is non-chiral because of boundary conditions. And Arkany, Hamed, Cohen, and Georgia derived how the five-dimensional anomaly looks like for anomalous global symmetry, where we're starting from a five-dimensional anomaly-free theory. And so basically what one finds is that anomaly is localized on two ends on the brain of the extra dimension, with the coefficient equally split between the two. So this Q here is just FF dual, and A is... has also delta function coefficients in front of it, specifying where it's localized. So this is a general result for five-dimensional theory, where boundary conditions lead to anomalous global symmetry. So let me now look at what's going to happen. This is once again my model. There is U1 Pacekhaven symmetry, and if I shift the Lagrangian because the symmetry is anomalous, the Lagrangian is not going to be invariant, and the if I shift by a gauge transformation beta, then the variation of the Lagrangian is going to be proportional to beta, and it's going to couple to the anomaly coefficient, which again has a delta function, anomaly is localized on the brains, and couples to all FF duals of all the gauge groups with appropriate couplings, appropriate charges of the fermions running in the loop. So that is what I expect to be non-invariance of the Lagrangian to be. And it should, this shift in the Lagrangian should arise from the fact that pseudo-Goldstone boson has anomalous couplings. So let me look back at residual gauge transformation. That had to be a square bracket. So this is a residual gauge transformation that I wrote before. And under that U1 symmetry transformation that I just had on previous transparency, B5 shifts, but I know what my residual transformation is, and I lost the decomposition, and so what happens is that B5 contains there is in Kaluza-Klein decomposition there are those two Goldstone bosons, and so each of them is transforming by a shift. So now I know how the Lagrangian is not invariant under this residual gauge transformation, and I know how the Goldstones shift if I perform that symmetry transformation. So the same variation of the Lagrangian that I wanted to obtain because I know that the theory is anomalous and action is not invariant will arise from the following effective interaction, where the Kaluza-Klein even and Kaluza-Klein odd Goldstones, pluses and minuses, where here I wrote them instead as odd and even, coupled to anomalies, FF dual on each of the boundaries of the extra dimensions. And after we've actually got to this point, we found out that this group of people had related results a little while ago. So there are two massless states that we started before we broke the symmetry explicitly. They couple to anomalies on the boundaries, but there are two anomalies on each boundary of extra dimensions, so one can form even and odd combinations of the anomalies, and the Kaluza-Klein odd axion couples to odd anomalies, so it would be FF dual, but it has a Kaluza-Klein decomposition, so it will have to be odd under Kaluza-Klein parity. It couples to FF dual, which is odd under Kaluza-Klein parity. So, for example, Xi odd, zeta odd, couples to F0, F dual first Kaluza-Klein mode, versus the even axion couples to FF dual, for example, 2-0 modes or 2-1 modes, and so on and so forth. This one... And again, I think I have it's going to be this one would be suppressed. The coupling is going to be suppressed by just electrovic scale wave. That would be a dangerous axion with a large coupling, and therefore this is the one which we made massive by breaking symmetry explicitly. The other one, the odd one, actually, if we expand the wave functions and write it to leading order in five-dimensional coupling constant. So the other one is coupled with the strength of 1 over F Pacek Wien, and therefore this one will be weakly coupled. It will not be dangerous, and it will lead us to the result we wish for. It will be the lightest Kaluza-Klein state, very weakly coupled to other Kaluza-Klein states. So the next to lightest Kaluza-Klein state will possibly be long-lived and will lead to displaced vertices. So that I already said, that Kaluza-Klein even mode couples to even anomalies, and the coupling is relatively strong and we need to lift it. Because we lifted it, this would be an axion which could possibly help us we could use to solve strong CP problem, but because we made it heavy, this guy, it will not solve strong CP problem. Kaluza-Klein order axion is not so harmful, so its coupling is weak. It couples to different Kaluza-Klein states. It doesn't solve strong CP problem because it doesn't couple to FF dual. It couples to first zeros and first order Kaluza-Klein states instead of FF dual or GG dual in QCD. But it will give us interesting signatures. For example, it allows for the decay of next to lightest Kaluza-Klein particle, since it couples to the, for example, photon and first excited state of the photon. And the axion itself, C minus, zeta minus, can be made much, much lighter than the next lightest Kaluza-Klein particle. Just in, as engaged mediation, gravitina is much, much lighter than NLSP. So one can simply go ahead and derive the couplings of that Kaluza-Klein. You can derive couplings both for Kaluza-Klein even and odd Goldstone boson, but we are mostly interested in Kaluza-Klein odd. So just decompose five-dimensional gauge fields in Kaluza-Klein components, and now those are, for example, hypercharge gauge fields. And the reason I'm looking at hypercharge is because the hypercharge gauge boson is often the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle in universal extra dimensions. So now it will be next to lightest Kaluza-Klein particle. We can decompose it in Kaluza-Klein states, and just considering the same couplings that we going starting from the point where we had this effective Lagrangian generated by anomaly, we can do the expansion and find out the coefficients of how the and coupling constants of how the axion is going to couple to different Kaluza-Klein states. We can see that the sum of Kaluza-Klein states must be odd to have non-zero coupling. One can similarly go back and figure out the coupling of the axion to the fermions, and obviously it's a derivative coupling, but here's an explicit expression of how it looks like. Once again, it couples only to an odd parity fermion pairs, fermion operators. So now, what happens now is this Kaluza-Klein state, which is, for example, mostly B5, or at least I'll think about this B5, this as B5 of this axion, this is going to be lightest Kaluza-Klein particle. It's going to be stable. And I'll assume that it, as often happens in universal extra dimensions, that hypercharge gauge boson is the lightest Kaluza-Klein particle. So what will happen in the collider, all KK particles will cascade down to the lightest one. And then the lightest one is going to decay to a photon or Z and B5. B5 will escape and it will be missing energy. And so if the decay length of the first Kaluza-Klein mode is sufficiently long, then we are going to have displaced vertices like in gauge mediation. So one can calculate the widths of KK modes, the lowest KK modes, for photon and Z. One can calculate the lifetime, and I'll just summarize that there is a formula for decay length based on expectation that lightest Kaluza-Klein mode is around the TeV, and the Pacek Wendt PQ symmetry breaking scale is 10 to the 9 GeV. So based on that, this is a characteristic decay length. We can see by choosing those parameters that will lead to displaced vertices. So basically, if we want to displace vertices, we want to have Pacek-Wendt symmetry breaking at 10 to the 9. The axion or axion-like particles that we got is stable. So can it be a dark matter? If you want a usual WIM dark matter at electrovic scales, then Pacek breaking symmetry scale will be 10 to the 3 GeV. So it's pretty low. It will only allow us to have a few Kaluza-Klein modes before the five-dimensional U1 is strongly coupled. So that can be high enough that all our calculations are still reliable. There are sufficiently a few Kaluza-Klein modes lying around, so all the decay calculations, all cross-section will be reliably calculated. But clearly, if we the safest way of looking at potential dark matter candidate and the safest way of looking at or the only way of getting interesting collider new collider vertices that we were our initial motivation requires that the parameters are very different. So we either get displaced vertices in the model or WIM dark matter. And we've looked at BBN constraints, for example, absence of hot dark matter and so on. And the interesting regime of parameter space is allowed by existing constraints. I'll come back to some of the constraints from electrophoric precision and Tevatron, and basically they are not existent. So before winding down, let me just briefly discuss the possibility of getting this axion as a dark matter. So if I wanted a typical ordinary WIMP, then its coupling should be of order 1, and FP check WIMP should be more or less electrophoric scale, maybe a few TeV. And then the leading annihilation will happen, leading contribution to the annihilation will happen through a T-channel, through the coupling of the of my axion to the Kaluza-Klein state of the standard model fermion, and then going to two standard model fermions. One can estimate what this cross-section is, and that's where I will get a constraint that I would have to require that FP check win is high enough that there are several I can just calculate this. This is a Kaluza-Klein expansion. Masses are well defined. So I have to make FP check win is to be large enough so that I can really do summation of the Kaluza-Klein tower without worrying about the fact that Kaluza-Klein states are heavier than the cutoff of the theory. So once again, we are lucky enough that FP check win can be taken to be such that there are several Kaluza-Klein modes below the strong coupling scale of five-dimensional theory. So with that annihilation cross-section is, here's a set of parameters, for example, a very kind of preliminary look at the coupling strands of the axion. It's an order one coupling strands. And if the coupling is getting large, then there is too little dark matter. Small coupling is too much. And this is the WMAP region where there is the right amount of dark matter, right Rayleigh density in this can exist in this model. Obviously, it's kind of very preliminary look at what happens. One can also ask, is this axion, can it work as a dark matter in a weakly coupled regime where we would have displaced vertices, so you would want this coupling constant to be much smaller than 1. And that is much more complicated. So generically, to prevent overclosure, we somehow need to inflate away the axions, and for low reheating temperatures, as a result, there is generically too few B5s, too few axions left over. Maybe one can do something, but one would expect that one needs other contribution to dark matter from other particles. One can attempt a larger reheating temperature, but then one needs to dilute B5. And it's a complicated function. How much dark matter we are going to have is a complicated function of reheating temperature, and that would be at least beyond my abilities to figure out right now. So I'm not sure. I don't think my collaborators are willing to do that work in detail either. So as far as electrophoric precision constraints go, just generic constraint on the size of universal extra dimensions basically puts it out of reach of a Tevatron, but it can be accessible if you have right set of parameters. It can be accessible at LHC, and in principle, because the Higgs wave functions are not flat due to the Pichek-Wien symmetry breaking on the boundaries, there is a new source for electrophoric precision observables, but we've made an estimate, and for desired values of the parameters, that correction is tiny, so basically there is no constraint from electrophoric precision. And now let me just conclude. I described a new five-dimensional extension of the standard model with universal extra dimensions with anomalous global symmetry. And it's kind of interesting what the anomalous global symmetry does to begin with, because you have a field which naively you expected to be a Kaluza-Klein odd even field. It actually behaves and interacts with as Kaluza-Klein odd field and behaves and interacts very much like an axion. An interesting part about this can be that it can mimic one of the interesting signal of gauge mediation. It could also provide a conventional dark matter candidate for small symmetry breaking scale for Pacek-Wien symmetry. It's much more complicated question whether that can be. It can provide a new dark matter candidate for higher symmetry breaking scale. And I think there are lots of interesting things to do. First of all, real dark matter study would be interesting. I've used as an illustration the deconstructed description, and one can ask whether there is anything interesting in deconstructed description done more carefully than just an argument to show that you have two light states. We couldn't use this axion. We had two axions. One was made heavy. We couldn't use this axion to try to solve strong CP problem. Can one make interesting extensions of the theory of this model rather to solve strong CP problem? What if next to lightest Kaluza-Klein particle is not hypercharged gauge boson? What would be the signals? Would they be different from SUSY signals? Would they be mimic some other SUSY signals? Can one construct, and what's interesting about the models in warp space? And here there is some work in progress by Jay Hubisch, and I guess it's his student. So let me finish here.
Can you remind me how light the axion has to be to solve the strong CP problem?
I don't remember, but this one is 300 GeV, so...
Well, I know that's too heavy, but...
Can you comment a little bit on the constraints on BBN and CMB also?
Let's see. So... I think my recollection is that it just has to decay quick enough, and we'll just made an estimate of how quickly, what the symmetry breaking scale is if it decays quickly enough. Or rather, decouples quickly enough. And then there is obviously a dark matter constraint, which is exactly similar to say what you would get in gauge mediation if your dark matter candidate is too light.
Okay, let's try theory again.